Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Farai Chidea, and you know, if you commit the crime, you have to do the time. Well, all right, in grade school, maybe that meant writing an essay.
Ooh, not exactly. That.
Yeah, it's like, I will not, you know, pinch the teacher, whatever.
I love this story.
A federal judge in the U.S. District Court has one-upped the essay as punishment by forcing someone to write a full book, not just one, a couple folks. Is that quixotic or pedantic? Well, the judge who did that ruling joins us right now. It's Judge Ricardo Urbina, United States District Court in Washington. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. I have to admit this is completely inspired, but let me just start with the facts. You gave a sentence to Andrew Bodner, Dr. Andrew Bodner. What was the case about?
The case involved situation in where two pharmaceutical companies entered into an agreement, a non-competitive agreement, that when reviewed by the Federal Trade Commission, required that the individuals involved, specifically the defendant, provide a declaration as to whether or not the agreement would unduly compromise the consumer. The statement indicated one thing, but later on the Federal Trade Commission realized that the statement was false. He was charged and then pled guilty.
Okay, so I understand it was a misdemeanor. Originally, he was charged with a felony. And how did you come up with the idea of saying, I want you to write a book? And what instructions did you give? How do you deliver the injunction to me as if I were him?
Well, I indicated that sentencing involves four factors, which the judge reviews and then balances in light of the circumstances and facts of the case. One of them is rehabilitation, the other is retribution, then there's incapacitation and deterrence. I indicated to Mr. Bodner that in light of his background, in light of his skills and education, and in light of the fact that this appeared to be an aberration, I was prepared to put him on probation for 2 years, requiring him to pay a $5,000 fine. But because the law seeks to promote respect for the law, and because sentencing is a vital aspect of that process, I directed him to write a book that would be useful to other persons similarly situated to him in the future, so that other persons who are confronted with the same or similar circumstances would not get involved with unlawful behavior.
Okay, Judge, that gets you the retribution part, it seems to me, but what about the deterrence? Is there a little deterrence in here as well?
Well, yes, I believe so. Deterrence has two parts. It's the deterrent to the individual who committed the crime and then deterrence to the general public. This person, Mr. Bodner, a very well-educated fellow, is now going to have to sit down and dissect how he got in trouble and understand it to the extent that not only he can comprehend it, but that he can write it in a way so others will comprehend it. And I feel that that's going to be a task that will take him quite a substantial amount of time and an investment in effort.
Judge, I have to ask this. When you come up with a sentence like this and deliver it to a defendant, what does your gut want, their reaction to be? A, no, Judge, not that, anything but that? Or do you want him to say, yes, you're right, I'll do it?
Well, of course, the latter is the better of the two alternatives, because showing remorse and taking responsibility for the act is certainly a part of the process we look forward to having the defendant accept. So in this case, actually, we discussed the issue of a book, of writing a book, and he did not seem at all put off by the fact that he would have to invest a considerable amount of time in writing something that I was going to read.
Okay. So in a second, we want to ask you about a completely different case with some news implications that you ruled on. But in order to wrap up the book business, you actually did this with a lobbyist already. So you've got two books in production or produced. Do you want to read these books?
Well, the first book was required of an individual who pled guilty about 1998. He was an active lobbyist. I required him to write a book that would address the Federal Election Campaign Act and one that would be instructive to other lobbyists. To be perfectly honest, I was not very interested in reading that book. But in the current circumstances, I think this individual will write something that I will, in fact, be interested in reading.
All right. Well, Judge Urbina, you also ruled in a very, very different case. You ordered the Bush administration to release 17 Uyghurs who are now on their way to Palau. But it was a battle over their fate. Did you think that it would happen as quickly as it did? We're talking, of course, about Chinese Muslims held in Guantanamo Bay. Why did you rule that way? Did you think that they would be moved this quickly? Very briefly, please.
Well, it wasn't really so quick. These individuals, many of whom were detained since 2001 and 2005, have been held, and for a while their situation looked desperate because no country was willing to accept them. However, with the new administration, I got the firm sense that things were moving and efforts were being made, and I'm very glad to know that these efforts have now been successful.
All right. Well, it's certainly a fascinating case, and I'm sure that you're following the progress of those Uyghurs as they're transported.
Yes, I'm following the progress. These are individuals who are determined not to be enemy combatants, persons who I felt under the circumstances should have had their freedom some time ago, given the government certification that they were not enemy combatants.
All right. Fascinating. We'll have to see if you can collaborate with them on a book. Judge Ricardo Urbina of the U.S. District Court in Washington,
D.C. I see a whole franchise.
I absolutely see a franchise. And I will just say before we go to Femi that we want to hear what your punishment for white collar criminals would be. 877-8-MY-TAKE. If you could get somebody who stole TARP funds, what would you tell them to do? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.